Thank you for joining us for Food and Stuff. My name is Gretchen Miller. Got some exciting news. We're going to be adding some new content to this show with some blog information from theblindcook.com and theblindkitchen.com. Stay tuned next week for that new additional information. This week, we're going to have my kind of farewell to the current content. I will still include some from Smitten Kitchen, which I just love, but just want to let you know there will be a slight change in programming. We're going to start off with a recipe for potato latkes, even better. Note, every 15 years, I get to rewrite and overhaul an old post just because I'm tired of looking at it. It's true. It's right there in the bylaws. Trust me. Don't fret. The way I make the latkes has not changed, but this post was aggressively overdue for some fresh photos and a bit of crisping up, and just in time for Hanukkah. Everyone makes latkes, fried potato pancakes that are the star of the traditional Ashkenazi Hanukkah celebration, a little differently. Some are more mashed and thick, some are small in smaller bits and very flat. I love them all, but perhaps unsurprisingly, I still think mine are the very best, tangled in a knot, barely tethered with batter, and very crisp. Here are my unwavering latke principles. Russet or Idaho potatoes only. The best latkes are made with starchy baking potatoes, which gives us textured edges and as much lightness as you can get from a knot of potatoes enrobed in batter and fried in oil. If you're in the UK, my understanding is that Maurice Piper's are the closest equivalent. Coarsely grated. For warp speed and an appreciation of intact knuckles, I like to grate my potatoes in a food processor. My Cuisinart model has an oval-shaped chute where I can lay potatoes on their side for the longest strands. A spiralizer also makes very charming mop-looking latkes. Well-seasoned, salt and pepper, please. Potato starch and egg for binder. In addition to an egg, I prefer potato starch instead of flour as the binder in my latkes. I find the effect lighter, more crisp, and it leaves them naturally gluten-free. I can find it easily online, and my bag lasts a long time. There's a link at smittenkitchen.com. Latkes are best small. In my humble opinion, a latke should be one or two bites at most. I think of latkes as handheld food. Larger ones are too messy. If you come from a line of fork and knife classy latke eaters, well, that's lovely, and keep it up. I'll be over here apathetically sloppy. Do not skimp on the oil. My favorite oil for latkes is peanut oil, but if nut allergies are a concern, any high heat friendly vegetable or sunflower oil will work. Check the label, and if it's not made clear that it's good for frying, choose another type. I put a generous 1/4 inch layer of oil in my pan, and when a pan is heated properly, as I'll walk you through below, the vast majority of the oil stays behind. I never need to add more between panfuls. Scale up as needed. I routinely 5 times this recipe to use a whole 5-pound bag of potatoes for a party. For our annual latke vodka party, shamed by having run out in 40 minutes last year, I'm going for a full 10 times to 15 times my usual recipe. Go ahead, make them in advance. Latkes reheat fantastically. I keep mine in the freezer if making them in advance and reheat them on baking sheets at 375 degrees Fahrenheit until they're crisp all over again. My best advice, if you're making them with the intention of freezing them for later, cook them for a minute less so that the color is a touch lighter, and this way when they retoast in the oven, they won't get too dark. All-season latkes. If you think that latkes are just for Hanukkah, with all due respect, you're totally missing out. I have yet to see a better bed to rest your poached or fried egg upon, like a hash browns for the holiday season. And the fact that latkes are so easy to make in advance and reheat and recrisp in the oven means that they can be an especially schedule-forgiving brunch dish. We also love them as party food, ideally topped with creme fraiche and caviar to please the Russians in your life. More suggestions below for everyone else. Things to serve on latkes: sour cream or creme fraiche, applesauce, caviar if you're fancy, lox works too, something pickled, like these easiest fridge dill pickles, or this milder Viennese cucumber salad, or pickled red onion or shallots. Something fun, like smoked whitefish dip, chicken liver pate, wild mushroom pate, or tzatziki. Things to serve with latkes. I feel that handheld latkes need handheld salads too, and highly recommend one or both of my favorite endive salads. Endives with oranges and almonds, or endive salad with toasted breadcrumbs and walnuts. Here I keep the breadcrumb mixture on the side in a bowl with a spoon and leave the endives as boats that you can spoon it into. A simple soup like Balthazar's cream of mushroom soup or silky cauliflower soup. And please don't forget the New York sour, aka Manischewitz sour. Here's the recipe. Potato pancakes, also known as latkes, makes 12 small pancakes, takes 30 minutes, and the source is the Smitten Kitchen. Your yield will vary by the size of your latkes. I aim for small ones, about 2-ish inches across, and get about a dozen per batch. You're going to need 1 pound of russet or Idaho baking potato peeled, 1 small yellow onion peeled, 1/4 cup of potato starch or all-purpose flour, 1 teaspoon of kosher salt, a few grinds of black pepper, 1 large egg, peanut or vegetable oil for frying. Prepare the latke batter in a food processor on the large holes of a box grater. Coarsely shred the potato and onion. For longer strands, lay the potato sideways in the chute of your food processor. Transfer to a lint-free towel and wring out as much liquid as possible. Let stand for 2 minutes and then wring it out again. Transfer the wrung out potato and onion shreds to a large bowl and add potato starch, salt, and pepper and toss to coat the strands. Add egg and mix until evenly coated. Then fry your latkes. Place your empty skillet over medium heat and heat for 2 minutes. Yes, really. Increase the heat to medium high and pour 1/4 inch of oil into the pan. Let it heat for a full minute before adding your first latke. This process of heating the pan still dry and then heating the oil ensures a virtually non-stick experience, even in a stainless steel or a cast iron skillet. So that's an excellent tip to follow. You can form your latkes in one of two ways, in packed tablespoons or, as I prefer, to use a fork to twirl some strands around as if it were spaghetti. Transfer to the heated oil and carefully lower in the pan. Repeat with more pancakes, spacing them out, and flatten them slightly if you prefer a thinner latke. Cook the latkes until the undersides are browned, about 1.5 minutes, then carefully flip and cook until equally colored on the second side, about 1 minute. Transfer the latkes to paper towels to blot the excess oil and repeat with the remaining potato mixture. To keep latkes warm, heat the oven to 175 degrees Fahrenheit and keep a large baking sheet inside. Cover it with foil for easier cleanup, and as you fry the latkes, drain them briefly on towels and transfer to this tray in the oven. As far as doing ahead, latkes are a do-aheader's dream. Cooked, they keep well in the fridge for a day or two, or in the freezer, well wrapped for up to 2 weeks. Reheat them on a baking sheet, no need to defrost them, first at 375 degrees until they're crisp all over again. If you're making them with the intention of freezing them for later, cook them for a minute or so less so that the color is a touch lighter, and this way when they retoast in the oven, they won't get too dark. Yum! Next, we're going to have a recipe for squash and chickpea Moroccan stew. Our first night in Paris in October, we had dinner at a great inexpensive Moroccan restaurant called Chez Omar. The specialty is couscous and the various stews you ladle over it. Alex had the chicken, I had the vegetables, but I hear we really missed out on the royal, which is a mess, big mess of meat. Served family style, the food was unpretentious, light, and so healthy, I made a mental bookmark to try my hand at it when I got home. Which, being me, I promptly forgot about. What jogged my memory was a version of a Moroccan vegetable stew on Ask Aida on the Food Network last week. I think that Moroccan cooking can be intimidating. I don't have a 1 3/4 quart Le Creuset cast iron Moroccan tagine in Caribbean blue for the low price of $200, nor do I have one I picked up for $2.95 at the Central Souk in Marrakesh in 1968. Okay, I wasn't even alive in 1968, but for some reason, everyone but me seems to have a story about something fabulous they bought there when backpacking across the world, and I'm jealous. I also don't have a couscousier, yet astoundingly, I was able to pull off this squash and chickpea stew for dinner on Sunday, and it was delicious. This is the kind of food that's perfect for this time of year. The ingredients are fairly simple, and the harder-to-find ones like saffron and preserved lemons are optional. The dish is incredibly healthy, and it's a nice healthy break from the heavier stews and soups that usually get us through the cold winters. Squash and chickpea Moroccan stew. Here is the recipe adapted from Aida Molenkamp. So, about those preserved lemons. This isn't the first Moroccan dish that I've made, but I've always been on the fence about the inclusion of preserved lemons. What if I searched all over town for them and ended up dropping $10 on something I hated? Would I like salt pickled lemons? This time I took the plunge and I found them at the Garden of Eden for you New Yorkers, gourmet specialty shops for everyone else, or you can try Elise's homemade recipe, and there's a link here. And well, I think they're an acquired taste that I have not acquired yet, but hope to. Yet they were wonderfully fragrant in the dish, and if you're looking to try something new, or if you're already smitten with them, go for it. To veganize this, replace the butter with additional olive oil, use vegetable broth, and skip the yogurt. This serves 6 to 8. You're going to need 1 tablespoon of unsalted butter, 1 tablespoon of olive oil, 1 medium yellow onion, small diced, 4 medium cloves of garlic, thinly sliced, 2 teaspoons of ground cumin, 1 3-inch cinnamon stick, salt and freshly ground black pepper, 1 pound of butternut squash, large dice, 3/4 pounds of red potato, large dice, 2 cups of low-sodium chicken or vegetable broth, 2 cups of cooked chickpeas, drained, 1 14-ounce of can of diced tomatoes with juices, pinch of saffron threads, this is optional, 1/2 of a preserved lemon, finely chopped, 1 cup of brined green olives, Aida recommended, I'm going to spell this, C-E-R-I-G-N-O-L-A, Serignola. Steamed couscous for serving, fresh cilantro leaves, roughly chopped for garnish, toasted slivered almonds for garnish, plain yogurt for garnish, and a hot sauce of your choice for serving. Heat the butter and the olive oil in a 3 to 4 quart Dutch oven or heavy bottom saucepan with a tight-fitting lid over medium heat. When the oil shimmers, add the onion, garlic, cumin, and cinnamon, and season with salt and freshly ground black pepper. Cook, stirring occasionally until spices are aromatic and onions are soft and translucent, about 5 minutes. Add squash and potatoes and season with salt and freshly ground black pepper. Stir to coat and cook until just tender, about 3 minutes. Add broth, chickpeas, tomatoes and their juices, and saffron if you're using it. Bring the mixture to a boil, then reduce the heat to low. Cover and simmer until the squash is fork tender, about 10 minutes. Remove from the heat and stir in the preserved lemon and olives, and then serve over couscous, garnished with cilantro, almonds, and yogurt. I think that sounds amazing. Next, we're going to have a recipe for a bourbon pumpkin cheesecake. That just sounded like a good mix of ingredients to me. My sharp-eyed husband caught this bourbon pumpkin cheesecake recipe while I was typically flipping through a gourmet magazine last year. Although it was a total hit at Thanksgiving, my fleeting recipe attention span struck again this year, but as I began hunting for new and different fall-themed cheesecake, it was made clear I'd still be welcome at the table with something else, just a little less so. Like any good newlywed, last year I made 2 cakes, one for the family we would spend the afternoon with and one for the family that had reserved our evening shift. I had intended to do the same this year until I realized that I'd left the base to one of my springform pans at my parents'. Already having 2 batters and crumb crusts prepared, I cursed several times, refilled my wine glass, and decided I'd try to make 12 cupcake-sized cheesecakes with a second batter. Why, oh why, did I not buy these the 15 times that I've seen them at the store and I've fawned over them, the headaches that $15 could have saved me? But while the full-sized cake looks lovely, the jury is still out on whether those cupcake cheesecakes are ever coming out of the pan, and it's not looking very promising. Good news, however, is that the remaining batter fit perfectly in a single 4.75-inch springform, no doubt purchased on impulse because it was so cute. I know it's a little late in the game to change your dessert plans to this, and how arrogant for me to suggest that you should. But if you're looking for that little something else, something that will make your pumpkin cheesecake sing, that splash of bourbon, crunching of ground pecans in the crust, or even slightly sweetened sour cream topping could be used to juice up any recipe. And now we make pie. Bourbon pumpkin cheesecake serves 12 to 14. Source Gourmet Magazine, November 2003. 2018 updates. I continue to make this every Thanksgiving season, sometimes twice, and have made some changes over the years. There are little things, ginger snaps, some salt in the crust, and then there are bigger ones like wildly simplifying it if you have a food processor. Read to the end first for these instructions. Or if you wish to make these instead as cheesecake bars, read to the end for this too. Weights have also been added. For the crust, you'll need 3/4 cup graham crackers from or ginger snap crumbs, 1/2 cup of pecans, finely chopped, 1/4 cup of packed light brown sugar, 1/4 cup of granulated sugar, 4 tablespoons of unsalted butter, melted and cooled, 2 pinches of salt. For the filling, you'll need 1 15-ounce can of solid packed pumpkin, it's about 1.5 cups, 3 large eggs, 1/2 cup of packed light brown sugar, 2 tablespoons of heavy cream, 1 teaspoon of vanilla, 1 tablespoon of bourbon liqueur or bourbon, this is optional, 1/2 cup of granulated sugar, 1 tablespoon of cornstarch, 1.5 teaspoons of ground cinnamon, 1/2 teaspoon of freshly grated nutmeg, 1/2 teaspoon of ground ginger, and 1/2 teaspoon of fine sea or table salt, and 3 8-ounce packages of cream cheese at room temperature. For the topping, you'll need 2 cups of sour cream, 2 tablespoons of granulated sugar, and 1 tablespoon of bourbon liqueur or bourbon. This is optional. And as for the garnish, you'll need some pecan halves. To make the crust, you're going to invert the bottom of a 9-inch springform pan to create a flat bottom, which will make it easier to remove the cake from the pan, and then lock on the side and butter the pan. Stir together crumbs, pecans, sugars, and butter in a bowl until combined well. Press the crumb mixture evenly onto the bottom and 1/2 inch up the side of the pan, and then chill the crust 1 hour, although honestly, I do it for much less these days, often only 15 to 20 minutes. Make the filling and bake the cheesecake. You're going to put your oven rack in the middle position and heat the oven to 350 degrees Fahrenheit. Whisk together pumpkin, eggs, brown sugar, cream, vanilla, and liqueur if you're using in a bowl until it's combined. Stir together granulated sugar, cornstarch, cinnamon, nutmeg, ginger, and salt in a large bowl. Add cream cheese and beat it with an electric mixer at high speed until creamy and smooth, about 3 minutes. Reduce the speed to medium and then add pumpkin mixture and beat until smooth. Pour the filling into the crust, smoothing the top, and then put springform pan in a shallow baking pan in case the springform leaks. And then bake until the center is just set, 50 to 60 minutes. Transfer to a rack and cool for 5 minutes and leave the oven on. Make the topping. You're going to whisk together sour cream, sugar, and liqueur if using in a bowl, then spread on top of the cheesecake and bake 5 additional minutes. Cool the cheesecake completely in the pan on the rack about 3 hours. Chill, covered until cold, at least 4 hours. Remove the side of the pan and bring back to room temperature before serving. So as far as doing ahead, the baked cheesecake can be chilled and covered up to 1 week. So a few ways that I've simplified this recipe over the decades plus that I've been making it. First, do you have a food processor? If so, listen closely. This recipe is easier than you can imagine. For the crust, you can go ahead and grind your cookies and pecans. No need to pre-chop, although it helps to break up the cookies a little bit. And sugars together to make fine crumbs, and then even add cold butter in the cubes and run the machine until the mixture clumps. You can then wipe out your food processor bowl, not even fully wash it, it doesn't matter, and make the cheesecake layer in there. But I put the ingredients in a different order. First in the bowl go the sugars, then cold cream cheese cut into a few chunks. Blend and blend together until it's absolutely smooth with no lumps at all. Scrape down the sides. Now add the pumpkin, cornstarch, salt, and spices and blend to combine. Add the eggs one at a time, blending briefly between additions. Add the vanilla, cream, and bourbon if you're using it. And that's it. You can go ahead and pour it over the crust now and bake it as written above. If you want to make cheesecake bars, you're going to line the bottom and sides of a 9 by 13 inch cake pan with one large piece of foil with no tears in it. I find that flipping your cake pan over and molding the foil over the top and sides first before flipping it back over and lining the pan with this foil causes less tearing. You're going to coat it lightly with butter or nonstick spray, either 1.5 or 2 times the crust recipe, so you can have a substantial enough base for a bar. Press it across the bottom and then 1/2 inch up the sides and then chill it as you do above. Make the pumpkin layer as written above and pour it on top. This bakes at 350 degrees Fahrenheit for 30 to 40 minutes. Check it at 30 and then 35 just to be safe, i.e. it's much faster. Continue with the sour cream topping as written, and to serve it once it's totally chilled, carefully lift the whole pan out using the foil sling and transfer it to your counter. Use a knife dipped in hot water to make clean slices and wipe the knife between cuts. I cut mine into 24 squares. If you want to make even fewer cheesecake squares, you could have this recipe, but use a full yield of the crust in an 8 by 8 inch square pan. The baking time is 30 to 40 minutes, about the same as the full size bars. I'm looking forward to adding in our new content next week. Thank you for joining us for Food and Stuff. My name is Gretchen Miller.